Welcome to One Walt, One Legal Profession, an international podcast. My name is Veronica Hova. I'm a director at the German Federal Bar.
My guest today, Goran Klemenčič from Slovenia, is not easy to introduce. Firstly, there is no major international organization that Goran has not worked for, like the United Nations, the Council of Europe, the Organization for European Cooperation and Development, and the World Bank. He also worked for the European Commission, for the German Foundation for International Legal Cooperation, the United Nations Mission in Kosovo, and others. His main fields of expertise are economic crime, fight against corruption, human rights, good governance, criminal justice, and torture prevention. Secondly, Goran has worked on almost every continent. He worked for the projects in the EU, the Western Balkans, the Russian Federation, Ukraine, Central Asia, China, Latin America, and North Africa. Thirdly, Goran was a state secretary, first deputy minister, in the Ministry of Internal Affairs in Slovenia from 2008 to 2010, and he was Slovenia's Minister of Justice from 2014 to 2018. Right now, Goran dedicates himself to the promotion of the rule of law and the justice reforms in Uzbekistan as a chief legal advisor at Regional Dialogue, a Slovenian NGO. In addition, he teaches anti-corruption and compliance at the Tashkent State University of Law. Goran, welcome to the podcast. It's an honor to have you as my guest today.
Veronica, it's an honor to be part of this podcast, and because I listened to your first one, and it brings back some memories of, because I'm quite a podcast fan, you know, and your first one sounded like a BBC World documentary. So, I was really pleased that you invited me. It's an honor to be here, you know.
Thank you for kind words, Goran. Though you are a global citizen, your home country is Slovenia. And I would like to say a few words about Slovenia to our listeners who are maybe not that familiar with the country. Slovenia is a country in Central Europe with a population of 2.1 million people. It has a beautiful nature. Slovenia has mountains. It has a coastline, an Adriatic Sea. The country was part of Yugoslavia until 1991. It became member of European Union from 2004. An interesting fact, the author of the lyrics of the national anthem of Slovenia is Franz Prezerian, who was a lawyer and a poet. Prezerian is as important to Slovenians as Pushkin to Russians or Goethe to Germans. The German-Slovenian relationship is very good. I'm citing the website of German Foreign Office. It says, the two countries enjoy very good relations based on mutual trust. Bilateral economic cooperation is extremely close. Germany is Slovenia's most important trading partner by far and is one of the principal foreign investors in Slovenia. Goran, I invite you to add to my introduction. Can you give our listeners a couple of interesting facts about Slovenia?
First of all, I would like to compliment you on the reference to Pushkin and to Goethe. It's true. Prešeren, Slovenian biggest poet, which, by the way, was a lawyer, graduated in Vienna, and was then, because he was a little bit of a nationalist, he was not allowed to practice law for many years. But basically, yeah, I think a lot of your listeners or Germans know Slovenia basically as a country that they pass through when they go to the Croatian coast. You know, we are a small nation squeezed in a way between Austria, Italy, Hungary, and Croatia on the south. 2 million, as you said. But in a way, you know, I'm a kind of a global person, really a liberal, but I'm very proud of my nation, because it's one of the smaller Slavic nation on the, you know, on the edges of the West. We didn't have our country for many years. The last time we had our country was like in 7th century, when, you know, Carantania was, anyway, but I'm not bothering your listeners with that history. It is a small country, which is, you know, everybody's proud of their own country, but I mean, we also are. It really combines everything. It's sometimes they said it's you know, we got a lot of, let's say, Germanic, let's say, professionalism and, you know, rule of law and, you know, tidiness, but with some spice of Balkan, you know, in a good way. At least that's how I see it. We gained independence 30 years ago. Slovenia was the first one of the republics that succeeded from Yugoslavia. We fought a relatively successful war and were spared, luckily, and in a way, tragically, also the slaughter that then happened in the former Yugoslavia. We are actually this year celebrating the 30th year of our independence. And just a small, perhaps, anecdote, which in a way is true. It is true that actually the founders of US and the writers of US constitutions actually got some inspiration by the way how the first Slovenian kings were appointed. Namely, after they were selected, they were put on a chair, and then the lower peasant came to them and slapped them in the face to remind them that they are accountable to the people. And actually, that is a real thing. It is written in the journals of George Washington and Benjamin Franklin, that they used that inspiration when they were writing the U.S. Constitution, and when Bill Clinton was visiting the president of the U.S. was visiting Slovenia, he actually repeated that story. We are small, but we are perfect.
Thank you. That's very interesting historical anecdote. You know, I didn't know about that. Goran, I have never had a chance to talk to someone who is or was a Minister of Justice. Please forgive me a blunt or childish question. What is it like to be a Minister of Justice of a European country?
Well, that's a good question, and it's absolutely not childish and it's not blunt. I think it differs from, you know, person to person. Yes, I was in the government for a number of years, first responsible for police and security services, and then I was for 4 years a Minister of Justice. My experience is, and I'll be blunt here, it was in many ways frustrating. One of the reasons is I'm not a politician. You know, I was appointed to both posts, the Secretary of State for the Ministry of Interior and the Minister of Justice as a non-political appointee, because I've never been a member of any party. I can say for myself that I'm perhaps more left-leaning or, you know, liberal, but I have never hold a party card. I was too young to be a member of the Communist Party in Yugoslavia. And then I didn't do that. But somebody thought that, you know, like I'm a reformer, I know something, I had some kind of image as an expert. So, you know, they appointed me to those positions. And if you do not have at the end of the day, bottom line is, you need to be a politician, and I was not. I enjoyed very much meeting all my colleagues in, you know, Brussels, in Luxembourg, when we met. I learned a lot. But the problem is that politics is really kind of trying to find, a minimal common denominator. And I was just not made for that, to be honest. For example, we did a lot. I think we did a lot in the time when I was Minister of Justice, also to promote the rule of law in Slovenia and to do some reforms. We introduced a couple of stuff that were basically not there before. But honestly, if I look back at my career, because I'm not a spring chicken anymore, you know, I'm closing my 50s. I more loved the work that I did, for example, as a chief anti-corruption commissioner, because it's a direct law enforcement role. You know, you follow the law. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, but you know the rules of the game are clear. I can tell you, the rules in the politics are never clear. Far from that. It's you know, you need to be a special person for that, and I respect people who do that. But just let's say that's not the part of my career. Although it sounds and looks nice on my CV, it's not something that I enjoyed very much. Although I had a great team around me, but at the end of the day, you need a certain number of votes in the parliament. And if you're not a politician, oh my God, believe me, it can be a nightmare. I mean, I don't think I ever had so many headaches that I had when I was a Minister of Justice. I was just you know. Yeah, sorry, I'm being very honest.
Thank you very much for your honesty. You know, it's not often that you get such an honest question. Thank you. Well, what I'm very interested in as a representative of the German Federal Bar is how was your cooperation with the representative of the interests of Slovenian lawyers, the Slovenian Bar Association? And for the full disclosure, the German Federal Bar is best friends with the Slovenian Bar Association. We not only worked together closely on the European level, but also on topics concerning our national professional law and justice system. So what was your experience during your time as Minister of Justice with your lawyers?
Okay, you might be surprised, but I'll be very honest. I think although we cooperated good on some issues, the Bar Association was like, I mean, we fought a lot. Again, honestly, you know, the problem, which sometimes, and that might be perhaps interesting for your listeners, which probably to a large extent come from the federal bar, is like, you know, as a minister of justice, you're really in a, let's say, pecuniary position. You know, first of all, you are in the eyes of the media and politics and opposition or whatever, responsible for everything that goes wrong in, you know, the rule of law in the country. Mm. You know, if somebody who, even in criminal cases, if somebody who is in the eyes of the public considered, you know, guilty is acquitted, you know, it's like, what will the Minister of Justice say? Well, you cannot say anything. I mean, you are really kind of trying to be a mediator between, you know, judges, prosecutors, lawyers, corporate interests, and politics. And then, of course, the public. And that is often hard to do. You have a lot of responsibility, but at the same time, you have relatively little power, which is rightfully so, because, you know, you cannot interfere in judicial process or in, you know, in prosecutorial decisions. And of course, you cannot, you know, dictate how the bar works. I can say that, you know, and Veronica, I mean, this is another disclosure, you know, we have a common friend, Janez Starman, who is a very prominent lawyer in Slovenia. You know, he's my best friend, and he's also a friend of yours. And he is a vice president of the bar. But we rarely saw eye to eye in the 4 years when we were, when I was a minister. And to his credit, I don't think it was like once or twice that he would call me and say, well, Goran, you know, come on, you're my friend. You shouldn't do that. You know, anyway, to make a long story short, honestly, I didn't have a very good relationship with the bar. Mm. One of the reasons was that the bar was really pushing for the higher tariffs. And I was probably the only minister in the history of Slovenia, which in 4 years did not increase the tariffs. You know, for different reasons. I'm not going to that. But at the end of the day, I have to stress, while they were really formidable, let's say, opponents to many of my reforms, and they actually won in a couple of cases. I mean, you know, won in the say that they managed to undercut my reforms as a minister. I have to say that I always had respect for that. I think that, you know, this triangle, judiciary, prosecution, and the bar really need, you know, to talk it out. And sometimes you get your ambitions or your thoughts or your reforms through. Sometimes you fail, and that's that's the bottom line of democracy and rule of law. And when I look back now, I thought like, yeah, well, perhaps I was like pushing for something, you know, that was not really appropriate. And they were right to oppose me, and they did oppose me, I have to say. Plus, you know, my wife at the time, she was also a lawyer, so you can imagine that I wasn't really in a position as a former anti-corruption commissioner to get in the conflict of interest. But again, the bottom line is, I have a strong belief that a very active and professional bar is one of the cornerstones of, you know, any rule of law system or democratic system. And I can say that with some, let's say, authority, because I had a privilege to live, like you did in some way, Veronica, you know, to live through the changing of a system of governance from a authoritarian or semi-authoritarian to a rule of law as it is understood now.
Mm. Thank you very much. I'm very pleased to hear that, even though you did not increase tariffs of lawyers and tariffs of importers.
Yeah.
Goran, you were 19 years old in 91 when Soviet Union collapsed, when Slovenia became independent. You studied law in Ljubljana at the same time I studied law in Kiev in my home country, Ukraine, which was in the early mid-90s. The countries that were behind the Iron Curtain, like Slovenia and Ukraine, were going through a major and painful transformation in those days. Transformation of legal system, economic system, educational system, all systems, in fact. There were also wild times to study law, I must say. In Ukraine, I saw many international organizations that came to help my country with the transformation. And I remember the majority in Ukraine was quite skeptical about the impact these international players were going to have. But 25 years later, you can see how unbelievably much has changed for the better. So how did you experience Slovenians' transformation from a planned economy ruled by the Communist Party to a member of a democratic community of European countries?
Okay, I really liked what you said, that it was quite a challenging or a specific time to study law in those at those times. And I'll get back to that. But first, just a footnote. I mean, it was probably different in, let's say, former Yugoslavia than it was in most, let's say, Soviet republics. That is a fact. You know, we were an autocratic country, but not to the extent that rest of, let's say, Iron Curtain was. But as you said, it was like, I mean, I look at that time and I feel in a way extremely privileged that I come from a generation, as you might also, you're younger than me, although you're younger than me, that, you know, we came, this might sound a little bit weird, but I remember the early 90s. When in the streets of Ljubljana, when our new constitution was adopted, you could actually buy, I vividly remember that, you could buy a small print, you know, they made kind of different sexy booklets of our new constitution and of the European Convention of Human Rights on every, let's say, ice cream stand. You went through the streets of Ljubljana, you bought a couple of, you know, ice cream balls, and you could buy there also a small pocket edition of the new constitution or the European Convention on Human Rights. And people were doing that. You know, it was an amazing time. It was like we actually believed in the rule of law, that the law can change things. Regretfully, with the cynicism of this year, of those years, and, you know, people do not believe that anymore to that extent. But that was just an amazing time. And I'm sure you had that same experience. You know, I went to law school at the end of 80s and at the beginning of the 90s, where, not 90, but 70% of textbooks were just scrapped away because they were, like, you know, based on, you know, a different set of rules. And, you know, we were taught, like, we were basically really being taught as we go. You know, like, wow, the parliament adopted a new constitution. Wow, the parliament, you know, abolished a new death penalty. Wow, the parliament, introduced, the right to a lawyer in a criminal process. And that was the, I mean, it's an amazing experience. And I really feel privileged that I went through that transition. And I often speak to my daughters who are now, you know, in a high school and trying to enter the university and whatever. And they, this is, it's just like being through that transition is, it's an enormous experience. Although, as seen in most other countries, because I travel the world so much, it's like, usually, you know, those high flying, let's say, aspirations then fall down to reality of, you know, what the world is, what the capital markets are, what the real politics is, and then, you know, it brings cynicism. And I think that cynicism in law is, first of all, it's very present, but it's very also dangerous.
Well, about the law studies, I had a similar experience in Ukraine when in 91 the country became independent and everything collapsed. I saw country going down the black hole in at enormous speed. And at law faculty, The new constitution of Ukraine was adopted in 96. So through the whole studies, you did not know, so this area of law is still Soviet law. This area of law is new law.
You had to put
the puzzles together, you know, about your system. And that was wild times. But I'm also very grateful that I have experienced this, but now doing rule of law promotion for BRAC gives me, I have a different inspiration by doing this work, you know, because I know what it does. And
No, I totally feel you, Veronica. Sorry to prolong this part of the discussion, but I do feel you. And you know what was the important thing, at least when I look in the retrospect in that, also law students of my generations and a couple of generations before me and after me, and I guess before you and after you, you know, you actually needed to think, you know, you needed to make a decision because you didn't have a textbook or a solid law, like learn these 200 articles and you'll pass an exam. No, because they were changing, like in the middle of, you know, in the middle of school year, you know, the whole new criminal code was adopted. So what the hell do you do? You read the old one? No, you actually needed to think, you know, you actually wanted, why the hell is this happening? And perhaps, you know, I often say, and I'm sorry to prolong that, but I often say, because I'm also a law professor or a teacher, you know, I say to my students, when, you know, if somebody asks you, why is this rule so and so? And if you answer to me, like, yeah, because it's written in Article 220, paragraph 10. I said, look, that's not a sufficient answer. That is like answering to your kid when your kid does something wrong or is reprimanded. And he said, why? And you said, because I said so. No, you actually need to have a reason. The reason might be in constitution, philosophy, social, you know, development. International norms, but you have to have a reason. You need, and that's what law is all about, you know, arguments, and not just the will of power, because this article said so. And you lived through that same area as I did, that different articles of the criminal code or the constitution were totally different in a previous system, and then they changed overnight.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry.
No worries. Goran, as someone who has a deep understanding of the high value of the promotion of the rule of law in international legal cooperation, you are now contributing your experience to the transformation in Uzbekistan in Central Asia. As you already mentioned, the first guest of this podcast was from Uzbekistan, and I spoke to him about the ongoing democratization of the country. For those who are interested, please go back and listen to this first episode. Goran, can you please tell us about the mission of the Slovenian NGO Regional Dialogue in Uzbekistan?
Well, sometimes people do ask me, you know, why with, you know, my career of former Minister of Justice and blah, 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 I joined this regional dialogue. I have to say, I'm sure that like to probably 99.999% of your listeners, that doesn't mean anything. I mean, the name of regional dialogue. It is an amazing, in my opinion, an amazing international NGO, which was established by a you know, formidable person, Miusha Sever. She's a Slovenian citizen, and she has worked in many post-conflict situations. You know, she has been a journalist first, including working for the CNN. She's a Slovenian citizen. Then, you know, she worked in Afghanistan, she worked in Azerbaijan, and then, you know, she settled for one reason or the other in Uzbekistan, and she is one of the rare international NGOs that really have a real respect and an impact in a country of Uzbekistan. And, you know, she created this institution which has offices in Slovenia and has offices in Uzbekistan, and focus on basically promotion, the rule of law, freedom of speech and democracy. I have actually, because I worked also for the OECD, I have been a team leader for the anti-corruption evaluation of Uzbekistan in 2012 or something like that, under the previous president, where the situation was pretty bleak and authoritarian. And, you know, that was not a very good experience. And then anyway, when I was finishing my post as a Minister of Justice, Miusha, you know, Miusha Sever that I mentioned before, approached me and she said, come on, this country has totally changed. You know, this country is really going through some important reforms. Just give me a chance and, you know, come to the country and see for yourself. And I did. And they, you know, she sold it to me, to put it this way. Uzbekistan is far from a perfect place. Honestly, although this is going on the, you know, podcast, and perhaps might not be so politically correct, one doesn't know whether this is, you know, permanent or this is sustainable. But given my work abroad and also in EU, I could say that, I sense that Uzbekistan is one of few countries that is currently still swimming upstream, you know, because, I mean, things are not going very well in the world. I mean, everybody noticed that without being, you know, paranoid or whatever. And Uzbekistan is doing that. I mean, it's one of few countries that really tries to change, you know, in the way of the rule of law. And regional dialogue is doing a lot of that with the help of the U.S. State Department funding, some EU funding. Anyway, Miusha and her team, including myself, I think we managed to, in the last 4 or 5 years, you know, brought 2,000 different international experts to Uzbekistan, including you, Veronica, of course, and we so much appreciate that. I mean, it is, I'm not saying it's a success story, but, you know, looking around the world now with a little bit of my cynical view of what, you know, the rule of law is going through around the world, Uzbekistan, I think it's still on the, let's say, positive side, and it's definitely worth supporting. And it's not, you know, many people, I'm sure even in Germany, absolutely in Slovenia, you know, they don't know about it. It's one of the stunts. It's like Kyrgyzstan, Kazakhstan, Turkmenistan, but Uzbekistan is you know, the most populous and let's say the most progressive country right now in the Central Asia, and it deserves all the help it can get, and especially the people. I teach at the Tashkent Law University, and I'm, you know, and I taught before in the Slovenian, you know, in the Ljubljana Law School and in the European Law School in Nova Gorica. And I'm telling you, I'm just simply impressed by the young people that are going now through the legal studies in Uzbekistan.
Well, this I can confirm, because when I was in Uzbekistan 2019, upon the invitation of Regional Dialogue, we also met with students. I was highly impressed with the quality of thought, with the quality of language, with their eagerness to find out about law systems of other countries. And I can confirm what you're saying. And I must say, the regional dialogue in Uzbekistan is a success story. I've been in this field of international cooperation for 10 years. And when I saw how regional dialogue works and how much, what their contacts are, everybody in Uzbekistan knows who regional dialogue is, and they have a very high opinion of the organization. So you're doing a tremendous work. Coming back to this time, 2019, when we met in Uzbekistan, we spent 3 days talking with the Chamber of Advocates of the Republic of Uzbekistan about the independence of lawyers from the state, about the development of profession. The legal profession in Uzbekistan is going through what it is maybe the biggest reform in its history. Hmm. And the German federal bar is also trying to help him with it. What is your opinion on the international cooperation between the bars?
Well,
is it helpful? Should there be, I don't know, between Ministry of Justice only, you know? Yeah.
No, I mean, again, and again, I hope it will not sound arrogant, but because of my experience as a Minister of Justice, etc., I could look. Most of the international cooperation in most, let's say, transitional or post-conflict countries goes through, you know, either the international organizations, you know, UN, Council of Europe, OECD, OECD, World Bank, IMF, whatever. The second phase is usually, you know, bilateral cooperation between, you know, development agencies and ministries of justice in that area. And then usually, perhaps the least present is like cooperation between the bars. And I find that as a minus. I mean, that there is least cooperation. I mean, to put it differently, I think, and I noticed that from firsthand experience, it is extremely important and it is extremely valued. You know, nobody, even the biggest expert, you know, or a credible person from the Ministry of Federal Justice, you know, in your country, will never be received in the same way by either Uzbek or Ukrainian or, you know, name the place. When they talk about rule of law, about what is to be, you know, to, you know, equality of arms, you know, fair trial and stuff like that, in comparison to if somebody who is a member of the bar speaks to them. Because, you know, people, it's usual, you know, people associate, like, you're doing a similar job as I do, but in a different country. So I'm absolutely more prepared. It's psychological. I'm absolutely more prepared to do, to listen to you, because you understand my problems. They might be totally different, because, you know, problems of a lawyer in Uzbekistan are, for, you know, God's sake, absolutely different than they are from a lawyer in Munich or Berlin or Frankfurt or, you know, Hanover or whatever. Or for that matter, in New York or Boston or, you know, San Francisco or Ljubljana, if you want. But the basics are the same. So I always, also when I worked, like, you know, 25 years ago at the Council of Europe, I was a project manager, and I was actually involved in a project that it doesn't matter with special investigative means, etc. I actually called and used a lot of, let's say, German high level police officers who did, you know, undercover investigations, and they had a much bigger impact on people like in Albania or in Serbia when they were transferring their knowledge to them, as I could have, or as 20 professors, you know, and I don't want to be negative now about them, but, you know, could have, because it's, so the bottom line is, I think what you are doing and being, you know, like, really, I mean, you know, a big bar, transferring this to other countries is extremely important, because the connection and the appreciation of the local people, of the local lawyers, is so much higher. Mm-hmm. If you have, like, you experience that yourself, Veronica. I mean, not only in Uzbekistan, but in other countries. You know, it's different if you speak or your colleagues from the bar speak to the lawyers of Turkey, Russia, Ukraine, Uzbekistan, Slovenia, if you want, you know, or Serbia, or, you know, Machu Picchu. Sorry, you know, it does matter. It does matter than if somebody comes, you know, from, like, I'm a, you know, a career servant of the, I don't know, UN. I know all the international conventions by heart, so I'll speak to you about that. So I really appreciate that, and I think that is something. And plus, you know, I think Germany, although doing increasingly better on that, you're still much behind from what, for example, US is doing with their, you know, with their system. They are present everywhere, you know.
That's true. Yeah.
And it is also important that, because you, Germany represents, again, I come from a, you know, I was educated partially in, let's say, in a Slovenian system, which is basically close to the German system of law. But then also in the US system, because I went to Harvard, and, you know, so, you know, those two systems of law, civil and, you know, continental or Anglo-Saxon, whatever you call them, in the transition countries, both needs to be represented, because I think that is the only way to make proper progress. At the end of the day, it's the decision of the country which one it will follow, or what mixture of those it will follow. But we both know that there are significant differences, and you don't want that just like the Americans or the French or the Germans, let's say, preach what is their philosophy of the rule of law. It needs to be a combination of all. And I, coming from a small nation, understand that, you know.
Thank you for this valuable outsider's opinion. I must say, doing the work with bars, I think BRAC has cooperation with more than 30, even 40 bars all over the world. We have learned that we are more similar than we are different. And even if there is a problem in Uzbek lawyers that we do not have, but we immediately understand why is this a problem, what implications will it have, and what you have to do, yeah? So that's why these cooperations are also so fruitful also for us, and as they are for other bars. My last question will be, if as someone who has an extensive experience in international cooperation, like you, can you give the German Federal Bar a piece of advice for our international work?
Okay, Veronica,
outside a piece of advice.
Listen, I'm like, yeah. Okay, that's a good question. But honestly, you know, I'm old enough now to know that the only audience I can preach to and give advice, and they actually listen to me, are my students and my daughters, to some extent. So I feel, I'm in no position, you know, to give advice, your colleagues, except it's not an advice. It's basically, it's an outside view. And it ties to what I said before. I think Germany, especially after Second World War, you know, you guys really have, for different reasons, and let's not go into that now, but, you know, you have developed, at least in my eyes and the eyes of many others, you know, a formidable rule of law system, you know, that should secure democracy, human rights, and fair trials. In a relatively short period of time, considering what you have in the Anglo-Saxon system. And I think it's pretty robust. And I think it is extremely important that you export that knowledge, as many other countries have been doing beforehand, you know, with different success rates. But I think I can totally imagine, because I worked, in our system or in other systems, that there might be people, lawyers, who actually pays your salary, if I may say so, you know, produce, and they say, why the hell should part of my euro that I pay to the federal bar, you know, go for somebody who then travels to Uzbekistan or to Turkey or to Russia? Look, we all know we are living in a global world. You know, we cannot put a Berlin Wall up again and just think that nothing, you know, will come across. And there's, you know, it's, first of all, although I hate that as an anti-corruption fighter, you know, it's good business. You know, if you transfer, I mean, for if you convey some of the elements of your, for example, corporate or business law to be implemented in Uzbekistan, that will make life so much easier for your corporations that might invest there, or in China, for that matter, if you want, or in Russia. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, it's also about, of course, human rights protection and, you know, kind of, you know, having a, you know, a decent approach to what's right and what's not right. And anyway, I think in the past, that is my experience, that, you know, Germany has been lagging behind to some extent, especially in relation to US and, you know, their ABA programs, etc. Also behind the French and their, you know, sometimes, promotion of their legal system. But you can see that now through your work, through the work of the Federal Bar, through the work of the, you know, IRZ and different other organizations. And I think that is really important. I can tell you from the perspective of a receiver of that, and I know I speak too much. That's my former politician in my head, you know. But that is also a little bit of an anecdote. You know, when Slovenia was approaching, was a candidate for the European Union, we had, and that was like many years ago, under the Twinning Project, EU Commission sent us a judge, a senior judge from Munich, Judge Dukov, to come to Slovenia, to stay here for 2 years, you know, and to write a report. And the report was very critical, and but very on point. And there was a lot of controversy about it. But the first thing I did when I became a Minister of Justice, I asked my colleagues, you know, just dig out the report of Judge Dukov. And, you know, it was a 400-page report. And I spent the following weekend reading that report. And I was ashamed because so much of his recommendations were totally on point. And even like, you know, 15 years after we were already a member of the European Union, they were not implemented. So I copied that report and I sent it to all my directors in the ministry. And I said, look, that's part of our working plan. What I want to say at the end of the day is that, you know, foreign assistance, and especially if it comes from practitioners, either in the judiciary or in the prosecution, or as it is the case that we are talking right now, you know, from lawyers, you know, it does have an impact. It might not have an immediate impact, but on a long way, it stays. And I think your country is in a position that should do even more in that respect. That is my opinion. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Goran. And thank you very much for your time. We hope to see you very soon in person when this all will be over, that we can go to Uzbekistan and continue our work there.
Yeah. Likewise.
Thank you very much, Goran.
Thank you so much, Veronica. It was a pleasure to talk to you, as always. So, all the best to your listeners. And all the best to German lawyers or whoever listens to that.
Okay, thank you. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Thanks.